This is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Good morning, sports fans. Good to start your week off right here on Locks of the Week Radio. I'm Dave Medina, and this is Dave in the City. I hope you're doing all right as we continue on towards another big sports week as we get bigger and bigger and bigger with everything going on. Now, I have a big announcement for you all here today. Tomorrow is the big fantasy football preview show. We are going to look into fantasy football projections, some of the sleeper picks, some of the upcoming predicted busts of the year, the positions that you want to draft, draft strategies, and some of the players on the bubble. For example, a guy like Tom Brady, how is he going to do in fantasy football this season? So join me and Andrew Jacobson as he hosts this special edition of Dave in the City tomorrow here on Locks of the Week Radio. Thanks for joining us here today. We are in the midst of a big transition into football season, and as we do that, we have a lot to cover here on the show. Coming up here on this program, the fall of a legend temporarily, one man's chance for redemption, and much, much more here coming up in this city on Locks of the Week Radio. First off, I wish to welcome you all to the beginning of the intimates of August as we start things going here. And we know a couple of things happened over the last few days while we were off. Most significantly, it happened 2 days ago. Tiger Woods loses in the final round of a major after going into the round with the lead. He had a two-stroke lead going into Sunday, and he was paired up with a man named Y.E. Yang from South Korea. And Y.E. Yang did not back down. He held up. He had two incredible shots, a chip shot. I think it was on 16. But more importantly, the hybrid shot from behind a tree on 18 that landed just short of the pin, one of the most incredible golf shots I've seen in the last 10 years. And it all added up to a huge, huge, huge upset of Tiger Woods in the PGA Championship, the final golf major of the year, and pretty much the end of the PGA Tour season. And what do you say to that? I mean, Tiger Woods almost was automatic in those situations. But you know, he's still trying to recover from his long, long rehab, which took an entire calendar year almost to recover from. And now he came back and he struggled a little bit out of the gate, but he won his last two tournaments going into the PGA Championship only to lose. And it's so weird for Tiger Woods to finally be on the other side of the curtain. Usually these are the moments where he would be the one taking over and thriving. But no, instead, it was an unknown, a 112th or whatever ranked player in the PGA named Y.E. Yang, a guy we've never heard of before and will never hear from again. And he's the man who slayed Goliath, the man who won a major, even though he trailed the great Tiger Woods going into Sunday. And I got to be honest with you. I mean, I love Tiger Woods, and I think he's one of the greatest golfers I've ever seen in the game. But this was an electric moment for me, and and a few shots in particular really got me up off my seat. It's a great moment for golf, although it certainly brings down Tiger's aura and mystique a little bit. I really think that Y.E. Yang really brought some excitement back to the PGA. Now, he'll never see him again. He's never going to do anything close to this. He'll never even compete in any major for the rest of his life. But he can always look back on this day, August 16th, 2009, and say, you know what? That's when I did it. I became a champion. I beat Tiger Woods. I had the greatest round of golf in my life. and it was bound to happen someday. There was no doubt in my mind that somebody was going to rise up and beat Tiger Woods. Especially at this point in his career. He's already starting to reach 30s, and coming off the rehab stint, you know, it was tough. It was a tough go. I mean, he's trying to keep himself motivated, but one way or another, he just wouldn't have enough juice. And I think it just took something like this to really get him back on track. Now, it's not going to be easy. Tiger is not young anymore. Tiger is not just going to go on talent alone. I mean, he's always had motivation to win. But now, he's really going to want to make a comeback. Because it's now over three in the last three majors for Tiger Woods. And if you go back to the Masters, you could say 0 for 4. But not really, because he came back from his rehab in time for the U.S. Open. Still, it's just a case where Tiger's been, this is as close as I think he ever got to getting a major in this calendar year, 2009. It hadn't been easy the last two times, and it certainly wasn't easy this time around, but it was there. He had a chance. But he just kept missing those putts that he normally always made. And that's one of the aspects of his game that's really not talked about a ton. His putting is usually quite good, but not this time. No, his putting has really failed him lately. And now, at last, it has failed. It has resulted in someone else taking the spotlight. So where do we go from here? Well, first of all, you can tell, you know that the field, meaning everybody else except Tiger Woods in the PGA, is ecstatic over this, or ecstatic. And the reason is because now it gives them a chance. They're like, well, you know what? If he can do it, we can do it. One. Two, it drives Tiger Woods to be better. And I think this is what I've been saying for a long time. Golf needs this competition. It needs people to really step up and play with Tiger Woods, not just play and then have him be there at the same time. Or when it matters, they start folding. Now they have guys who actually try to be there with Tiger Woods. I think that's important. I think that helps the game. I think it's going to make the game better. I think this will result in much better tournaments down the stretch. Now that everybody feels that they're on a somewhat equal level playing field with Tiger Woods, it's going to get pretty exciting now. You got guys who will be up there trying their best and not just getting that mental block because they say, oh, it's Tiger Woods. He's probably going to find a way to win. I was truly excited at Sunday, and it really spoke to a large beacon of hope. It's a lot of hope for all these guys here in the PGA. And now it helps Tiger too. It helps Tiger Woods because now he realizes, you know what? The bar has been set higher. I need to raise my game. He will get better. The rest of the field will get better. And we're going to have some good golf for the next season. This is a big moment in golf history. And it's a big upset. I think, you know, a guy like Y.E. Yang, who no one ever heard of beating Tiger Woods, the way he did with those kind of shots, any other day, any other player, and Tiger holds on, but not this day. I got to give Y.E. Yang a ton of adulation, respect, and certainly a big round of applause. I mean, it was beautiful. It's beautiful to watch. And it really just reminds me of other big upsets over the years. Villanova over Georgetown. Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson. Things like that. I mean, it really does feel like an upset. It's like it's a huge, huge golf upset. It's big. It's a big upset. So I don't know if we've really comprehended the magnitude of this upset yet. But I tell you what, it's definitely up there. And it's something that people will remember for a long time. And golf and the PGA Tour and the circuit and all of its related courses are better for it. Up next here in the city, the rise and fall mostly the rise of one star and the fall of another and one man's irritation over it. We'll be back. This is Dave in the City. Back at it here in the city on Locks of the Week Radio. Hope you're doing all right. Hanging in there for Tuesday afternoon slash morning slash evening, whenever you're listening to the show. This show's on demand. Now, again, we're going to have a big, big, big fantasy football preview show tomorrow. So stay tuned for that. You're going to love it. We have a lot going on there. Andrew will join us. He'll be hosting. And so we have much to bring to you in fantasy football news. And so, it should be just electric. Stay tuned for that tomorrow here in the city, Locks of the Week Radio. Well, football is definitely coming. But you know, it seems like apparently there are only two people that matter in the NFL if you ask ESPN, Fox, and the rest. That would be Michael Vick and Brett Favre. And that's all you ever hear out of the radio these days. Vick. Followed by Favre. And so some of you may be thinking, I thought the Favre thing was over with. I thought Favre said he's not going to come to the team after all. Nope. Not according to Jay Glazer. Not according to Vikings players. Because between the two of them, they figure that Favre is going to come back. Apparently they're talking again. They're going to be trying to negotiate something. It's all hearsay, certainly. But now here we go again with Brett Favre. Favre. Trying to come back. I mean, give it up already, old man. Old bag, hurry up, give it up. Never ends. And you know, when I say it never ends, I mean seriously, it's not ending. The guy can't let go. He's just not that good. I just don't get it. I do not understand Brett Favre's desire to what? To win? You're not going to win that much in the NFC North with the Vikings. They're still a mediocre team. I mean, maybe they'll get 10 wins. Maybe. Are they the best team in the division with Favre? Maybe. Still got to improve their pass coverage, I would think. He doesn't have anyone to throw it to. I don't get it. I mean, they have a PR credibility, I suppose, but that's about it. So there you go again with Favre. And I mean, I just can't figure it out. I really, really can't figure it out. I mean, I know that Favre probably, you know, said no initially just so he could skip training camp. And some people will say, well, training camp isn't that important. It may not be, but it helps you establish a rhythm with your players. I think training camp is important. I would imagine it is. So there you go. That's Brett Favre in a nutshell. Okay. Then the other big story of the weekend was Michael Vick. And the big news was that Michael Vick signed with an NFL team. It happened on Thursday as there was a Eagles and Patriots game going on at the same time. Michael Vick signs with the Philadelphia Eagles. An interesting move, not in the least. And the reason for it, certainly, is because they already have a quarterback and on the Eagles, who's a pretty good one, in Donovan McNabb. So it brings up an obvious question in a football sense. What are they going to do to diffuse any potential tension between Donovan McNabb and Michael Vick? Because they're both quarterbacks. And, you know, Michael Vick is younger. And he's got a lot of work to do, obviously. I mean, he's got to first rehabilitate himself personally. Make himself a useful member of society. It's not going to be easy. And there's a lot of opposition. And I feel kind of weird just seeing that him even play on a football team again. He's made a lot of mistakes, no doubt. I mean, who knows? But that's just one part of Michael Vick's return and resurgence. The second half of it is Donovan McNabb going to be their guy in Philly? Is he just a means to an end to bridge the gap to Michael Vick? Is it like a message saying to Donovan McNabb, you know what, we had our fun, but this is it? What are the reasonings behind getting Michael Vick? I mean, he could be just a gadget guy. But I don't know. I don't know. It just, I mean, you hear from the coaches and the players, you just don't know. I mean, so many people are fed up with Donovan McNabb, and never realizing, of course, that McNabb's probably given them the greatest run of success in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles over a 10-year span. No disputing that. I tell you what, I mean, I saw a clip yesterday on, I saw an old clip of some old clips on some news, football news, and it was basically saying that the Philadelphia Eagles were at some point rumored to be leaving Philadelphia. This was about 1985, I believe. So, I cannot think that the Eagles were ever a tremendously great franchise for a very long stretch of time that compares to what they've done from 99 up to now, a whole decade. Philadelphia fans just don't know how good they have it. They're always ragging on McNabb. He's not that good. He doesn't win the big game. Well, he wins games. He wins games. He wins games. Would you rather be 3-13 every year? Would you rather be 5-11? Would you rather be a wild card team? Once every 5 years? Philadelphia fans do not get it. In about 5 to 10 years, the Eagles will be the worst team in the division by far. They'll be lucky to reach 5 wins each year. And then they're going to be talking about how great they used to be with Andy Reid and Donovan McNabb. You're not fooling me, Philly fan. Because you hate those guys now. You're going to be loving those guys in 20 years. You have no idea. No idea. You cannot appreciate what you have when you have it. And that's Philly fan for you. Just never gets it. They had the greatest hitter in their entire franchise history, Mike Schmidt. Never appreciated him once. Booed him the whole time. Never, ever appreciated the guy. But that's Philly fan. That's the way it's been. That's the way it will be. And it's the way it's going to be forever. I mean, the one that the Philly fans have loved the most is the fictitious freaking character. You know what I'm talking about. I don't have to repeat it. He made 5 movies. Well, 6, I guess. Boxing movies and so on. But that annoys me. So Philadelphia is really just preparing themselves for the future, which is a really good move, actually, in retrospect. Getting Michael Vick, as if they're grooming him to be the successor. It's a dicey situation. There's no question about it. And I haven't even brought up his personal issues. And I intend not to, for the sake of lacking redundancy, because enough outlets have already talked about how he's had his troubles, how he's really evaded the law, and his unethical practices with animals. I think that's well spoken for. There's no need to expound on it. So here I just wish to talk about his football qualities as we go forth here in the city. I mean, it's tough. If you were a fan of the Eagles, I mean, could you imagine how tough that would be? They signed him, and then all of a sudden they signed a guy like this, and you're like, ugh, what do I do? Do I root for this guy? I mean, how do I root for this guy? Strangled dogs, electrocuted cats, drowned puppies, laughed about it the whole time. That's what they say. That's tough. So, you know, I mean, that's a whole topic onto itself. But going back to the football angle, I mean, it's just weird. I mean, Michael Vick is a guy who really wasn't that great of a quarterback in the first place. But what's interesting is he had an interview on 60 Minutes, and as told by several reporters and other outlets, and explained through these clips and interviews, he apparently was not very, diligent when he was playing for the Falcons. He would not do take some practices off. He would leave early. He was not a very, he did not have a great work ethic. Sounds a lot like Vince Young, doesn't it? But this renewal and revival may motivate him to become a harder worker, and ergo, he may become a better quarterback in the end. So this whole scene professionally could help him. Obviously, there's a lot of roadblocks that could come in the way, but you know, you never know with Michael Vick. He could end up becoming a serviceable quarterback down the road. It's very interesting, though. I mean, it's a really, really sticky story, but it's definitely a fascinating story, too. The world shall see what we get with Michael Vick, but the one thing that I am not convinced of right now is that the Eagles are suddenly the team to beat in the NFC East. Really? When did this happen? I mean, I'm sure people were predicting this before they signed Vick, too, but when did this happen? All of a sudden, the Eagles are the team to beat? I missed the bulletin. Did they get a lot better? Did they suddenly get an offensive line? Did they get some wide receivers? DeSean Jackson's fine, I guess. Whoever that other guy is, they're fine, too. Did McNabb suddenly increase his throwing percentage by completion percentage by 10%? Did Andy Reid suddenly figure out not to throw the ball 90 times a game? Did the Giants, the Redskins, and the Cowboys suddenly decide to trade away all their best players and become 5-11 teams? Where is this bulletin? Where are people coming up with this idea that the Philadelphia Eagles are the best team in the NFC East? Oh, yeah, the Eagles are going to win this division. What? Say what? Based on what? One little run at the end of the month, at the end of December last season? Did you see what they were doing before that? They were wallowing around. They had to be called out. They had to be exposed just to play. And suddenly, this is the team to beat in the NFC East. They've never played a complete season. Despite the fact that they've won so many games, I mean, I've acknowledged this and we talked about it already, they still haven't played a good season from beginning to end, and they're old. And Dawkins is gone. How is this team suddenly the team to beat in the NFC East? I mean, they're going to win. They're going to win some games. They're going to probably go 8-8 or 9-7. Or they could go 6-10, but I mean, you certainly see a 9-7 season. This is the team to beat. I don't remember anywhere in the dictionary where 9-7 equals team to beat. Not in my entire life. So how is this a team to beat? I don't see it. More to come here in the city, including the off-putting and offsetting moments of baseball, plus one team whose rise to the cream of the crop has suddenly become a landslide down to the bottom of the hill. We'll get into that after this. This is Dave in the City. Welcome back in the city. I'm Dave Medina here on Locks of the Week Radio, coming to you direct from West LA, as we always do here on the show. Well, you know, it's been a big weekend in baseball. Some big series took place. Minorly big series, not huge, I guess. But the one theme of the weekend in the MLB was heads and concussions. And you know, danger and helmets and things like that. I mean, the concussion was a big theme of the weekend. And I tell you, it was pretty scary, honestly. And there were two particular instances that really worried me on Saturday. One was when David Wright got beamed in the head by Matt Cain, unintentionally, I think. He got beamed in the head, and he had left with a concussion on his own power. But he's not going to come back for a while. I would say maybe 2 weeks, maybe later than that. That was a tough moment. But even tougher was later that night when in Arizona, Phoenix to be specific, a line drive was crushed and it hit Hiroki Kuroda of the Dodgers on the side of the head. Fortunately, with his helmet on, and he writhed in pain. He laid on the ground for quite a few minutes, and a stretcher had to pull him off the field. He was okay. He tested out. He's out of the hospital. Some more neurological tests will be done this week. We'll get the results of those. But the clear point is, I mean, it really shows how dangerous a game baseball can be, especially for pitchers, because pitchers don't have helmets. Pitchers just pretty much pitch with only themselves to and their glove to block them. It's very, very scary. And so, you know, on a night like that, it's just a miserable night all the way around for a team like the Dodgers, who had been struggling anyway, but this really just exacerbated things. Once Hiroki Kuroda left, I mean, the soul was taken out of the team. At that point, who cares about the baseball game? It's just a game. Oh, man. Oh. And speaking of being beat on the head, goodness, I think Ryan Ludwig, as we record this at about 8:40 at night, oh, it wasn't the head, but it was the shoulder. He gets tapped on the shoulder by a knuckleball from Hager, a guy who's pitching for the second career time for the Los Angeles Dodgers. So Ryan Ludwig of the Cardinals gets on base. I thought it was a headshot, but it was just on the shoulder, thank goodness. But it does lend back to that whole theme, you know, and a knuckleball doesn't hurt at all. A knuckleball is like being hit by a Nerf ball. Still, the theme of that night was concussions and head injuries and the danger of the game. It was very scary. And as we mentioned, you know, the Dodgers at that moment were just not in it anymore. They lost the game eventually in extra innings. But who cares? At that point, it doesn't really matter. You know, and so, I mean, well, these things will happen, whatever will happen, things happen. But just a game. At this point, the Dodgers just want Hiroki Kuroda to be okay. And fortunately, he is, at least as far as we know. And baseball is secondary at that point. It's a game. You're listening to Dave in the City on Locks of the Week Radio. We're talking about things of the rise and the fall. Speaking of the rise and the fall, let's stick with the Dodgers for a minute there. Boy, they have really sucked some eggs this week. I mean, let's face it, they suck. I mean, they suck an egg and a couple of olives and maybe some onions. I mean, they're terrible right now. They lost six of the last eight games, and surprisingly, the pitching has nothing to do with it. The pitching's been fine. Broxton's had his problems. But we'll get, I mean, that's not really the only issue. That's just one thing. The bigger problem is the offense of the Dodgers has really put themselves in just a position to lose every time out. They score one run or two runs, maybe three. They're not consistently putting runs up on the board. And with the kind of lineup that they presumably have, it really is surprising. And, you know, the outfield's been doing a really decent job, although Manny Ramirez is really struggling. I mean, he's basically having a terrible time since the suspension. The Dodgers have not been playing good baseball. There's no way around it. Their pitching has been good, but that's about it. The rest of the team is not getting it done. Defensively, I guess they're doing all right, but they're struggling so much to hit. They've had the platoon Loney. They've had the platoon Russell Martin. They can't get anybody to hit the ball. except for the outfield and maybe Casey Blake sometimes and occasionally Orlando Hudson. After a while, that's going to catch up to the Dodgers, and it has. Now the cream has risen to the top, but the Dodgers are falling towards the bottom. And now all of a sudden, the Rockies are within 4.5 games going into last night. That isn't even bringing up what happened in last night's game. And now where it's all out of whack, there's a race. But I tell you what, despite all of these issues and problems and struggles, I don't think the Dodgers are going to lose this division. And the reason is pretty simple. It's because of time, basically. We're already halfway into August, so that means there's basically a month and a half left of baseball, 6 weeks. If I remember correctly, the Dodgers have 2 series left with San Francisco and 2 with Colorado. For either of those 2 teams to overtake the Dodgers in the division race, one of those 2 teams, or both, would have to sweep the Dodgers in a series. There just isn't enough games. There's not enough games, head-to-head, to make that work. It's just not going to happen. I mean, they're up too many games. They would have to sweep to have any kind of a chance. And by the way, the Dodgers have been playing both the Giants and the Rockies pretty well anyway. If they even take a single game in all 4 of those series between the Giants and Rockies combined, they're solid. There's not enough games left to make up. You have to figure the Dodgers are going to be at least .500 the rest of the way. And the reason is because they have a few series against some pretty awful teams. They're going to be playing Cincinnati for a few games. They're going to play Pittsburgh for a few games. And, you know, they're not very good against the Padres, but they are really bad this year. So they might even take a game or two from the Padres going forward. That's their schedule. They have the Cubs for the weekend, and then certainly the rest of the Cardinals series this week. But, I mean, that's like the toughest remaining part of their schedule outside of the division. I don't think the Dodgers are going to blow this thing. Yeah, what are they going to do in the playoffs? Probably nothing. But, you know, you never say never, because their pitching staff has been putting up some good performances lately. I mean, as a whole. I mean, Billingsley's been just in a mess. And Kershaw's inconsistent. But, I mean, eventually they could come out of it. And the fact is, in October, usually the pitching ends up being the better dominant force of the two. You can't assume anything. But you can pretty much make a pretty good assessment that the Dodgers are going to be really not going to have any chance of blowing this division lead. I mean, it would take them to continue the same exact pace that they're doing now for 2 months. No team will ever be that consistently good or bad over more than a month or two. It doesn't happen. I mean, just as much as a team will never really play 600 baseball the entire season, like every single month of the whole season, they also are not going to play 200 baseball for more than a month or maybe a month and a half. You start dealing statistics. You look at how much they're hitting. You look at how they have one of the top 5 run producing teams in the National League. You look at their ERA, which is among the best in the majors. You look at their bullpen, which has been very good all year. I mean, certainly it's fallen on hard times, but it's a good bullpen. Dodgers aren't going anywhere except to the first round of the playoffs. Now, they may not be the number 1 seed anymore. Whatever. They're still going to make it. That's irrelevant at this point. The question is, are they going to hang on to this division? And I think they will. I think they're going to do it. And this is a revolutionary moment for me. Because normally I just simply find excuses to predict things negatively for my own teams. But you have to use facts at some point. And if you go by the facts say the Dodgers cannot realistically blow a 4.5 game lead with 6 weeks remaining in the season. Even if they lost all 4 games against St. Louis and maybe half of the games against Chicago, and maybe they lost a series here or there against the Dregs, and then they split the series against San Francisco and Colorado, that puts them about .500 the rest of the season. And if you play .500 baseball, it would take you would either have to have the Giants and or the Rockies, one of the 2 teams, go red hot, like win 10 games in a row or something like that. I really don't think that's going to happen for either of those two teams. The Rockies do not have the same offense they had 2 years ago. They're not that good. They're good, but they're not great. And their pitching staff could get hot, but we don't know. I mean, it's just an unknown at that point. So you just it doesn't seem realistic to expect the Dodgers to simply give it up that easily. So we'll see. We will see. But my official word is Dodgers hang on to this thing. Find a way to make it work. Well, that's all I'm going to have time for today in the city. Thank you for joining us here as we do things here on the program. We do appreciate your patronage. And stay tuned tomorrow for the big fantasy football preview show coming up here on Lots of the Week Radio. Until then, have a great day, everyone. We'll see you next time.